the sound you've been waiting for. It's Bathrob Spears Broadside, your own local civil rights show here on November 11th, 2001, rolling right at you. 2.5 hours of hopefully your kind of talk with special guest Homes on Wheels President Ed Meneses, updates on the City Council, the Happy John Dine Memorial tomorrow, Monday, and ongoing sweeps against the homeless in the Pogonip, Harvey West, elsewhere, and of course at Camp Paradise. Stay with us.
Start the fire, but here we are firing away. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and with us on the line, live from Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon, is
John Paul Cupp.
Okay, and let me get these dials straight here, John, just a second. Welcome to Free Radio. Again, your name is?
John Paul Cupp, C-U-P-P. I'm the security coordinator at Dignity Village and also the political movement Homeless Front that kind of spun out of it to challenge the anti-camping and vagrancy laws.
Uh-huh.
Yes, sir. I was given this number today and told that they were going to do a show on the tragedy that's occurred with Camp Paradise and the problems it's gotten from the local government. And I wanted to call for unity with Justice City and Ted Hayes in L.A., Camp Paradise in Santa Cruz, Dignity Village in Portland, and the Tent City in Seattle. Have a link up. Historically, Tent City PDX, our email, www.outofthedoorways.com. We've kind of linked up with one another, our struggles. get an idea of knowing what's going on all over the West Coast. I just wanted to give a shout out to our brothers and sisters and on the streets in Santa Cruz. Send one love, one blessing, one movement, and wish everyone a nice day.
Hey, John, you got any time to talk about Dignity Village or how we fix for time?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
All righty. Well, how long have you been with Dignity Village?
I'm one of the core original soldiers.
Now, in a way, we're talking about our own, the kind of refugees that have been created in Afghanistan that are homeless. We have our own massive homeless refugee situation here in the United States. And in Portland, Oregon, you had, I guess, a good turn when your Judge Gallagher decided that the camping ban was unconstitutional last year, but the police kind of ignored that, and you guys formed what was originally called Camp Dignity in December
Dignity
last year.
Village. Yeah. What's happened at the spin-out past that, mm-hmm. now that the village has moved on and has reached sanction to where it's stable, what's called the Homeless Front, it's a few kids, and then Sisters of the Road Cafe and a couple of progressive social service agencies. And we're going to have we had some civil disobedience, and then we have some class action lawsuits on the works. Because if you or I were not to follow a federal judge's orders, that would be contempt of court, and we were to go to jail or we would go to prison. And we're saying what's good for a homeless person or a working person is good for the city government, because that we all have to follow the basic guidelines of the law.
And Judge Gallagher ruled last, September, or was it October? I think it was September, that the camping ordinance in Portland was completely unconstitutional as it was applied to homeless people?
Yeah. It had to do with freedom of movement and also criminalizing one's status. Those were the 2 points outlined.
Mm-hmm. And what have the police been doing? Continuing to issue camping citations, or have they been using other laws to do the same thing?
Yeah, they've been using that. And there's a 24-hour process that you... When they made the camping ban... they gave you one thing, is they're supposed to give you 24 hours, and they haven't been giving that. One of our cases is we basically caught them giving us a 24-hour notice, which is really for 3 hours, and we have it all on film. So we've had a lot of basic sneaky. It's even less the police, because they've kind of liaisoned with Sergeant Powell, the downtown sergeant, and Commander Rosie Sizemore. It's mostly the City Hall. And they like to throw this off on the police, but it's a product of Portland's policy and America's economic system.
But wasn't there a decision last August, a historic decision at Portland City Council, which in essence legalized Dignity Village?
Yeah, there was a... what they did is they basically... We had an agreement with them, and the City Council voted on it for tactical reasons. In the beginning, they were fighting us, and now it's been neutralized a lot because we've grown so much as a movement and we've consolidated with so many other facets of the community. It's kind of a big thing of pride to be a part of Dignity Village.
Now, John, explain very briefly, because we haven't actually done this, what Dignity Village is.
Dignity Village is a self-sufficient tent city for homeless people, formless homeless people. We run on the basis of self-determination rather than bureaucracy and institutionalization. We have 4 basic rules: no stealing, no drugs, no violence and disturbance. We have security. And then the 4th rule is productivity, that everyone either contributes or gets their own life taken care of. And we enforce the 3 basic top rules on an emergency basis. And the 4th rule, if you're not productive over a period of time, we have that space available for someone else to come in and use it.
Mm-hmm. And you serve about how many people?
About 60. We have a 60 cap, and then they have some guests and things, so we're probably at about 70. There's some trucks around the outside, so that probably puts it up to 85 or 90.
Homeless population of Portland, you estimate at?
About 5. The city says 3. Social services say 5, because not every... What they count for homeless population,
you're talking
is
five,
who
you're talking
the service.
5,000 or 500?
Yeah, 5,000.
Mm-hmm. So you're really only a kind of a light in the darkness, a kind of a drop in the bucket, right?
Yeah.
And what about the situation we have in the studio with us today, 2 individuals who are trying to survive in their vehicles here in Santa Cruz? We only have 1 phone line, so it's going to be difficult for you to talk directly to them, but they can hear you. We have Ed Meneses of the Homes on Wheels Santa Cruz organization, as well as Bruce, who's with him. And welcome, gentlemen. I'm sorry that you'll be have a chance to get to the mic soon, but what do you have for, how are vehicularly housed people treated in Portland? You want to give us an update on that?
Where we were at before under Fremont, historically for years on the northwest side was a place where people would go and kind of hide out. They get run out a lot. The Wicks case, the anti-camping case that was challenged, that was actually a motor vehicle case. At Dignity, we have a few cars around the perimeter. People park around the perimeter even if they don't join. And as long as they're cool, we're fine with that, and it gives them a sort of safety zone.
Mm-hmm.
And historically in the city, I don't think they're treated much different from other homeless people. Constant move around. Basically, if you're going to sleep in your car, you need to sleep in an industrial area because they tend to run you around a lot.
Well, I know that in Oregon generally you have this 24-hour law before they seize your possessions, which we don't have in California. And they also have your Oregon Eugene example, where there was a sort of a mini experiment where I guess they have places for, 48 vehicles, 3 vehicles per spot, 16 spots.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah.
You go ahead.
What I want to point out, though, real quickly with the 24-hour rule is it's only worth something if it's enforced, and that's the biggest problem we have here.
Mm-hmm.
With vehicle traffic, it's the same as just regular homeless people. Last time I squatted downtown, we're way out in the boonies right now because we got moved and I had to be in town early in the morning, so I squatted downtown actually. Wasn't recognized and I wasn't given a 24-hour notice. I didn't have a camera, so I didn't fight it without proof. And it was just kind of rushed out at 4 o'clock in the morning and kind of reminded of why I'm out at Dignity Village.
Now let me ask you, are they enforcing the actual camping ban that has been declared unconstitutional by Judge Gallagher some other law?
They've come out in the newspaper and said that they'll continue to enforce it if necessary.
Well, what you need, of course, is to try to get a restraining order against that. Are any attorneys working on that?
We have the Metropolitan Defenders, Legal Aid, and the Oregon Law Center.
Just 3 more than we have. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the one good thing I can be thankful for. There's a lot of people in high places that are willing to help us out, and I appreciate it.
It seems strange to me that I know that even after Gallagher's decision in September of 2000, the police continued to harass homeless people, and these attorneys have had a year to file a lawsuit. What's keeping them?
The city didn't file. They dropped the appeal, and they're trying to challenge that they don't have to enforce it on some sort of technical ground. So that's why we took and got arrested for it, so we could challenge the case in court and then sue them class action.
Mm-hmm.
It's really complicated. They're trying to say that that's a specific, that Judge Gallagher's decisions only apply in his courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
But our argument's going to be, if Judge Gallagher put a restraining order on you to stay away from your girlfriend and you went over there, and you just said, well, I'm not in Judge Gallagher's courtroom, they're going to cuff you and take you away. A judge's decision, especially a federal judge on constitutional issues and state constitutional issues, that stands and that's universal.
Well, he's not a federal judge, though, right? He's a local judge.
He's a state judge.
Right.
Yeah, but we got some federal rulings we're going to trust. That's why we got the injunctions going, because we're probably going to have to take it federal and state, both. And so that's why we got all them lawyers going on, because I think it'll be a lot easier now because we don't have to prove the camping ban's unconstitutional, because that's already been established. Basically, the question in a roundabout way is how much is a law unconstitutional when a judge says it is and under what condition?
Now, let me ask you this. My train of thought was this. How many times has Camp, as Dignity Village, which originally was Camp Dignity, moved, and what's your situation now? I understand you...
Well, 6 times. We're looking to try to get a private deal downtown. The city will work with us. Basically, to be honest about it, the city will work with us if we live out in the moon, but we need to be closer into the urban core to be more effective and to keep people more productive, and so there's a bigger turnover rate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a permanent community like it's sort of becoming. Mm-hmm. Because of social isolation, so there's a turnover rate and people are becoming productive and housed and working and things like that. So we're looking at trying to make a private deal over the next few months. We might be at the Sunderland site for the winter.
And the Sunderland site is a site that was previously, a leaf disposal site? Or
it's a leaf composting area, yeah.
And you were kind of put way there out in the boonies. in distinction to your previous six sites, which were pretty much in the downtown areas?
Well, see, we claimed the previous six sites. This one was basically, we were picked up, uprooted, and stuck here. They couldn't get us to break apart, so a few people, once we were basically swept, came out here to keep the thing going, and then we all came back.
So what you've done, I understand, as of early November, is you accepted this site temporarily, but you're looking for another one?
Yeah. We have, you know, the whole NIMBY thing with the neighborhoods. The last time we went to a neighborhood association meeting, we were treated very badly, and it scared a lot of the villagers. Mm-hmm. They weren't used to it. And so basically we're going to try and have a better ad campaign and more of a grassroots thing next time we try to move into a neighborhood.
I read
so
some...
Well, there's this mobilization of, like, the businesses and the merchant classes that try to propagate that, you know, the part of homelessness, like drug addiction, sex offenders, panhandlers, beggars. What we need is a better PR campaign, a door-to-door thing, before we try to... make a private deal somewhere.
Well, you previously, when you stayed in the other six sites, did you get lots of protests from the neighborhood, or was it mostly from the city government and the police?
It's mostly the city government, and then we would get isolated cases from individuals.
So
what we had was a detailed outreach team, and it neutralized a lot of people, or it brought them onto our support base.
The question I have for you also, we're talking with John of Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon, talking about their year-long struggle to simply establish what essentially is kind of an outdoor shelter for homeless folks, Homeless Run. Now, regarding the way that Dignity Village is run, Camp Paradise here is a sort of a patriarchy. In other words, it's run by one man or a small circle, and there's a sort of an authoritarian quality to it, which, you know, has turned some people off, but to some is required, and in a way, it's all we got, so we haven't got a lot of complaints. But how does Dignity Village run, and is it sort of a, without prettifying it or doing the PR number for us, tell us what kinds of problems you experience and how you address them?
We have a core, which anything naturally has, and then we have a consensus with the... And we have a democratically elected council, and that's what we run on.
But in fact, in the day-to-day, are there one or two people who make the big decisions?
Yeah, formalize, like if we're going to move somewhere or spend any kind of money expenditure or move decision is voted on democratically. We have day-to-day positions. Yeah, tents and population. They voted Ibrahim Mubarak, a Muslim, the coordinator, myself as security coordinator. Jack DeFari does trash, things like that, so it's tasked out.
Who makes decisions?
Sort of,
and when people get expelled from Camp Paradise, from Dignity Village for, let's say, drug use or something else, and I assume that's happened?
I remove someone for the night, but I don't have the authority to keep someone out, and it goes to the council if they want the person removed and for how long.
So there's
we have three people?
Or?
No, the council can be up to 25. Mm-hmm. Right now we had a couple people quit to seek housing, and so we're probably at about 21 or 22, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
What we have is three tiers of discipline. There's 7 days out for punishment, 30 days in permanent, depending on the degree, and sometimes we decide to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something, like say you just woke somebody up once, you know what I'm saying? And then we decide on a kind of... we have a sort of process and precedence in place, you know what I'm saying? And the council decides that. Security, all it does is maintain the stability for the evening.
What do you do with the argument, and I'm sure you've heard it, that, you know, you're dealing with a population of adults who, if they weren't in this camp, if they were living in a house, could drink alcohol, for example, provided they weren't abusive and you know, bothering their neighbors. What do you say when a homeless person says, look, why can't I drink a beer in Dignity Village?
Well, see, I drink beer. I don't drink beer here. I make that clear to people. This is a safe spot. Basically, when your political survival isn't set, you basically have to give up some of your own individualism for the sake of the whole. And the whole's basically what's giving you your tent. And had we been a camp that was libertine about drugs and alcohol, we wouldn't have got as far as we have now. We wouldn't have the money coming in that we do.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have the backing. And also, too, when you're in a densely populated area, alcohol takes on a different facet than it would if it's just you and your wife and you're sitting in front of the TV after work and you drink a beer and smoke cigarettes.
Now, what about medical marijuana? I know at Camp Paradise there were folks with medical marijuana cards.
Yeah, I heard about that. That was funny.
Oregon has a medical marijuana provision, right?
Yeah, we do. I've never came into that problem. I don't know how we'd handle it. That was interesting, though. I heard they grew it there or something, didn't they?
Yeah, there was. That was back in, in June. It was being grown for one of the patients, and the mayor came in and got upset about it. The police came in the next day and tore all the plants up. But there haven't been any further busts for marijuana in Camp Paradise. There was a drug bust last week for hard drug use, and there was another bust for a guy who was wanted for an assault charge in another place. But there has been no further busts for camping or for drug use in Camp Paradise. But there is a general fear, and I think a justified one, because City Council has not had this issue on its agenda. We have a City Council meeting on Tuesday where they were going to look for an alternate site because some, I call them posies, not people, environmentalists here who are very concerned about how the river looks. Pristine, you know, grounds for people to do their jogging and their nature walks, but they couldn't, you know, they're not interested in having even well-regulated camping, even though there are more than 600 people in the Pogonip camping, you know, off in the boonies in survival camping. Anyway, the Camp Paradise is concerned that once the armory, the Winter Armory Shelter, which is a large floor space where about capacity is 75, when it opens on the 15th, they're going to run them off and dump them all in the armory, and that's, of course, 4 days away. So, sorry, go ahead. I wanted to get that all out, but
that's
the
update. Basically, before we were given a spot, mm-hmm. the best thing you can do is take things and basically just move in. The shopping cart parade, the way you do it PR-wise, really affects how long you'll stay there and how well you're welcome. But I don't know. And also, I don't know how it is down there. Here, we have that happen on a semi-regular basis. At one time, before we were more solidified, you know, towards the beginnings, when we used to have those kinds of security problems they talk about. In fact, even more so, arson tried to burn us down, things like that, mm-hmm. and we survived. So I just kind of wanted to issue a call and a challenge to Camp Paradise to keep things together. And also, too, there's a few of us talking, and we'd love to go down there when we get a stable time and, you know, maybe do a little swapping for a week or two and just kind of consolidate movements.
You better come fast, because I think they're going to be there at the end of the week if the rumors I'm hearing are true. Again, I have no solid information that a bust is coming, but because they're not putting anything on the agenda...
Really?
Yeah, they had originally planned to consider moving Camp Paradise to a spot near the Pogonip, which is a large 600-acre greenbelt area, also fairly close to the city. But the posies, not people, environmentalists screamed and ranted and raved and wouldn't even let it be considered. And it's not even on the council agenda. And instead, they're considering a plan to move people to city parks, but that isn't coming back on this agenda. And the armory is opening up, you know, 2 days after the city council meets. And I'm afraid that will be it for Camp Paradise, unless there's a real strong reaction. So if you got anybody who wants to come down, you know, come on down while you can. They could use your expertise.
I heard you got a Green Party mayor that basically turned on you guys.
Yeah, he's green, all right. He makes us all green in the gullet. His name is Tim Fitzmaurice. I saw him at a Green Party meeting yesterday. He kind of slunk in and slunk out, and he not only favors, you know, continued sleeping ban, camping ban, repression of homeless speakers at City Council, refusing to allow campsites for people to sleep at, criminalizing people in their vehicles, supporting no parking regulations for people there. But he's, you know, he's done such things that he won't allow a vote on the war bombing in Afghanistan, which is, of course, creating millions of homeless people. So we got a real problem with Fitzmaurice, and of course a problem with the local Green Party that will not challenge Fitzmaurice, even though they are dutifully putting out statements that oppose in principle what he does. They won't go to City Council and say, "You turncoat, you traitor, what the hell are you doing?" and address the community and say, "This man is betraying Green Party principles. He is not, in essence, represent what I think, what the party thinks." So I'm saying this both to you, John, and also to the people listening locally, and actually we do go out on the web nationally. For those who are interested, our website is www.microradio.net/FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. And you're tuned to 96.3 FM here in Santa Cruz, California, Free Radio Santa Cruz with Bathrop Spear's Broadsides. I'm Bathrop Spear Robert Norse, and on the phone with us is, give us your full name again.
My name is John Paul Cupp, C-U-P-P.
John Paul Cupp of Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon. What lies ahead for Dignity Village in term? Actually, let me skip from Dignity Village because a lot of written information has been coming out over the internet on that. But in the studio, as I said, with us we have homeless on wheels activists Ed Meneses and Bruce, who are having their vehicles towed away almost seems daily. One man, Ed here, has lost 4 vehicles. Other vehicles are being lost. What are people in? Are people in Portland, Oregon, organizing? Who are vehicular campers? How are they dealing with the situation?
To my knowledge, there's no specific formalized organization. You do see cars in Northwest Portland kind of flock together, and you do see vehicular homeless people come to the outskirts of our village as well.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no formal thing.
How many vehicular campers would you estimate there are in Portland, Oregon, which is a city of what, 800,000 or 500,000?
The city itself is 475,000.
Gotcha.
With the suburban area, you're talking a little something under a million, like something about what you said.
Mm-hmm.
There's maybe several hundred, I would imagine, at least. Mm-hmm. Maybe even 1,000.
Now, what recommendations would you have for these folks and for our own Homes on Wheels group down here? I know that San Francisco had a group, the San Francisco Vehicular Residential Association, for a couple of years, associated with the Coalition on Homelessness, and I know Dignity Village is associated with Street Roots Out of the Doorways Project. That's your local street newspaper. Anything you want to... I'm going to try to actually... I'm going to think I will put activist Ed Meneses on the phone to talk to you directly if he wants to. Ed, are you interested in talking directly with John?
Well, if he's got anything else to say about what our
right. Anything... He's actually, working on the vehicular side of it. Is there anything you want to talk about in regards to that?
To be honest, sir, I don't own a car, so... no. I'd like to give a shout-out to him and... wishing the best of luck and wish Santa Cruz the best of luck in that. Keep in mind, like I said before, that the camping ban was challenged in Portland by somebody in a vehicle, so maybe they can do that kind of thing in Santa Cruz.
That's an idea. That was, what's the fellow's name?
The Wicks.
The Wicks, right. Was it Eddie Wicks? I go.
Yeah.
And his father?
Father and son.
Right.
Oh, there are some rowdy guys, too. I met them.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like to challenge them if for some reason something happens to Camp Paradise, which is something... none of us want to even think about.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that movement going because nothing comes for free. Dignity Village, it didn't come because it fell from the sky or the city gave it to us. We worked for it, we earned it, and we had to fight really hard for it, and we still have to fight really hard for it because even when it seems really solid, it's not, and you always have to have your vigil up.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. Well, John, I appreciate your taking the time and making this long distance call on a Sunday morning. Keep us advised. Tell Street Roots to send us the last 4 months of newspapers. I'm still waiting to get them and love to be able to pass them on.
Yeah, I can do that.
And we'll keep you advised. Maybe Homes on Wheels is hopefully going to be putting out its own literature soon, and I will be putting out a thing called the Street Shit Sheet. I'm actually writing it today, which I used to put out regularly and now put out very irregularly, and we'll try and get it to you. In fact, if you call 831-423-4833 and leave an address, or I can just send it to Street Roots, I can send you some papers as well.
I'll give you an address for here real quick. 9325 Northeast Sunderland, Sunderland, Portland, Oregon, 97211.
9325 Northeast Sunderland,
Portland, Oregon, 97211.
97211. Okay, and your name again is John Cupps? John Paul Cupps?
Yes, sir. C-U-P-P. Thank you, sir.
Hey.
Have a nice day.
Hey, thank you, John, and good luck to all the Dignity Village people. You really are an inspiration to a lot of us.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was, of course... a guest caller for the day from Portland, Oregon, John Paul Cupps of Dignity Village, and we're going to now give you a brief respite here, or is it a respite? I guess it isn't really, because I'm going to play for you now an interview I had with a smaller camp in Santa Cruz, a member of a smaller camp called Camp Freedom, and what's happening with other people who aren't in Dignity Village and who aren't in their vehicles, And while I do that, we're going to set up Ed in a position where he can actually do some talking, and we can get those phone lines open. In case you want to call in, you can. Phone lines are open now, 427-3772, 427-3772. And if you're calling long distance, 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. Your name is Emily. Emily, what kind of sandwich are you eating?
Swiss cheese and turkey and ham.
This is actually a
Just
Camp Paradise interview. I will give you the other interview in a moment.
No.
Why did you work all
morning? I worked because I care about Camp Paradise and I care about where I live. And I want Camp Paradise to make it, and hopefully doing a little bit of community service will show the city that, I don't know, we can save our homes.
How long have you lived here in Camp Paradise?
3 months.
And how is it for women living here? As a woman living in Camp Paradise, let me ask you this. How did you come to live to Camp Paradise in the first place?
How did I come to live here? Well, I turned 18 about 7 months ago. And I was the third kid, the youngest, and my parents kicked me out of the house, told me to never come back. So, I've been to Santa Cruz before, and I came here again because, I mean, I've been on the streets on and off since I was 12.
What city were you living in before you came?
Yosemite. And,
did you hear about Camp Paradise up there?
Or? No, I came down here, and I slept under the wharf for 3 days. And somebody told me about Camp Paradise, and that's when I checked it out.
And you've been here for 3 months. Again, I guess I ask again the question, how are women treated here as distinguished from, let's say, elsewhere in the city, or is it the same?
They're treated fairly. I mean, it's not harder or easier. Everyone's treated equally. That's how I think of it.
I know that they've set up a women's and men's dorm tents. Are you in one of those tents, or?
No, I'm not.
You have your own tent?
Yes. And I share it with my boyfriend.
And is he also from Yosemite, or is he local?
I met him in Santa Cruz. He's been in Camp Paradise for 2 weeks.
And what do you think Camp Paradise needs, or does it just need to be left alone?
I think it needs to be left alone. I think these people are doing a great thing. I think that they do need to be left alone because Camp Paradise is really not doing anything wrong. I mean, it's doing more good than bad. And it's really sad to see, like, the city try to shut it down. And, you know, there's more things to be concerned about than Camp Paradise. I mean, all these people are nice people, and no one's doing anything wrong, and I don't really think that Camp Paradise should be shut down.
Thank you. Anything you want to add?
No.
Yeah, that was an interview about 2 weeks ago with a woman at Camp Paradise, and Camp Paradise, as far as I know, is still up today, although I have not been able to have cellular contact with them with their phone, because the phone has apparently been disconnected, and I'm hoping we can get a call in, possibly from a nearby neighbor, a friend of Camp Paradise. Carl Wilson is often kind of cast in that role, and for those who want to get information to Camp Paradise or want to give donations or contributions, you can give a call to Carl Wilson, 425-4787, or come by his house on Felker Street. Give him a call, and he'll give you more information. Of course, one of my main concerns tonight has to do with folks who are not able to sleep safely tonight. I think Camp Paradise will probably sleep safely tonight and tomorrow night. It's only after the armory opens, I think, that they are going to get into the... They're going to find themselves ousted, is my fear. I would love to be proved wrong, and it's always possible I could be wrong. But I think without a significant plan, such as a shopping cart parade to go to another site, which is what was used at Dignity Village to keep their community together, the community will find trouble avoiding being dispersed. But we have people here who are not yet have not yet formed the community that perhaps they need to form. I'm thinking here of Homes on Wheels and other folks who aren't on wheels who are out there suffering from the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban, which prohibits sleeping after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning. That's sleeping, folks, just sleeping outside or in a vehicle. So you have to be able to, and you can't even be in a structure that's not a house or hotel. It has to be a domicile. Sleeping in a movie theater is illegal after 11 o'clock at night. Sleeping in a restaurant is illegal. Sleeping in a garage that's detached is illegal. Sleeping in a church is illegal. All these are not considered residences. Of course, the city does not enforce that stuff with any regularity, but it gives the police kind of blank check police state powers to do what it wants. And Ed Manessis here, who's an activist with Homeless on Wheels, has found out what it means to move from being essentially a middle-class businessman to being someone who has been criminalized and had his property repeatedly taken. Hi, Ed.
How are you, Robert?
I'm good. I'm certainly better than you in terms of maintaining my possession of my property. I don't know what I'd do if police were seizing my property every week and a half. What's happened to you?
Well, we've gone from being business people with a yard, a shop, a busy business, to complete homelessness now, yesterday. They took everything, the final thing that I had left. All I have now at this time is the clothes on my back. I am, in fact, not even a vehicular resident anymore, except for the fact that I'm with my friend Bruce, who does have a trailer, and we're both together in it. I do have a small mobile home Toyota Dolphin type that was donated to us not too long ago that needs to have some repairs. But they've taken everything else.
Give us the chronology. You were previously working. You're an auto detailer. You've had a business in Santa Cruz for what, 7 or 8 years?
10 years.
10 years, and out in.
We were in Watsonville and here in Santa Cruz on Portola Drive for 6 years.
And then we talked about this on the air at an earlier time. Difficulties put you in a situation where you essentially were unexpectedly evicted.
The landlord had a lien put on his property by the county, which led to our dismissal from that property. The property is now one large lot where, in fact, he used to store mobile homes and motor homes.
Where was it?
That was on Portola Drive on off 44 First Avenue. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, some of the vehicles that were there turned out being homes for the homeless. In fact, one of them was ours and my brother's, just to name a few, but several of the motor homes that were just being stored there are now on the streets with housing homeless people.
And you actually were able to move your auto detailing business into, and was it four vehicles, you and your brother? Or?
Right, we had a large truck, an Iveco van, we had a trailer for myself, a trailer for my brother, and another truck, which belonged to a friend actually, but we had some things stored in it. And you know, it was never our intention to be out on the streets. Never expected to do that.
This wasn't
but right
a gay life choice you made, a happy idea of just becoming a wild and crazy street person.
No, in fact, we had a very solid plan. And what we did was the county came in and removed us sooner than anyone expected. We had an obligation to the owner of the property to help him clean up and take care of what needed to be done there for his sake. But they asked us to leave sooner. We had to put our vehicles out on the street for several days. 3 days later, they were towed away.
How many vehicles were towed?
There were three vehicles towed.
By the county or by the city?
I guess somebody called and complained, and I'm not sure who did it.
Outside
I think
city
it was
limits,
CHP.
Probably outside the city limits.
Right, it was outside the city limits, barely. Mm-hmm. And that cost us a nice chunk of money, which we didn't have at the time. Due to the fact that our business had been shut down and we were basically, it was forbidden for us to do business there. So that obviously hurt us. but we still had a plan. And what happened was when we went to go pick up those vehicles, they were stored at a local yard on the west side of Santa Cruz.
North County Tow? Or?
North County Towing, right. Mm-hmm.
They seem to be getting all those vehicles at North County Tow.
It seems that they have they make a living at taking other people's property. And we'll get to more of that in just a moment. But we discovered at that time that there were people actually keeping vehicles near the Harvey West area. So because I had nowhere to put my large truck and my trailer, I moved them over there, wasn't even living there or sleeping in them. And afterwards, after we finally moved out of our shop, we did end up in that area. I only intended to stay for a short while, but they took my truck. North County Towing ended up with a truck. They had said they were auctioning it off, but it, you know, I saw that it was there.
This was after
many days later.
This was the first time they took it.
This was the first vehicle of mine that they had taken after we gotten the other vehicles back.
For the three vehicles that were originally taken.
Right. Mm-hmm. The tab on it was $2,400 or something ridiculous, which we did not have. And all that happened to it was it broke down in the street. I went there the next day, tried to get it out. They wanted too much money. I told him I can work something out with him. If he just pulled it out of his yard, locked it, kept, you know, it was broken down. There's no way it could have been driven off. So this way it wouldn't cost me any more money. He refused to do that. Basically, I think they just decided they wanted to keep that particular vehicle for themselves. And
when was this?
This was September 1st. Mm-hmm. September or August 30th is when it actually got towed.
This is where your vehicle was. It broke down. You went away for 45 minutes, came
That's
back,
right.
and it was gone, right?
That's right.
Down on Broadway and Ocean.
That's right.
Or something, yeah.
That vehicle was the vehicle that we were going to continue with. It was the vehicle that towed my trailer. And we were out of here. We were headed out. We had no intention of staying here. I met you right after that time. You were doing your street work, helping people out there, and I basically described to you what had happened, told you that I didn't want to become part of this, because I feared that if I did, I would get too involved, it would take too much of my time, and having worked with the homeless in the past, I'm certified, by the way. I've been doing this. I did this for a number of years.
You did what for a number of years?
I helped the homeless.
Uh-huh. And what do you mean by you were certified?
I went to Bethany Bible College, took courses there. I'm a certified addiction counselor. I have counseling training. I have all this background specifically geared to dealing with the homeless.
Well, you don't look like an alcoholic or a drug abuser. To me, I've never seen you in that. You're not in any of those problems. I mean, we know that all homeless people are, you know, alcoholics and junkies, right?
Well,
it must be psychologically crazy. That
that's probably what it is. Yeah. You know, I am not without sin. I have had a drink from time to time. I have inhaled.
Go get 'em, guys.
It's been a long time, but I have. It's just that it was thought at the time that so many of the people, and this is 1988-89, so many of the homeless did have addiction problems that's the only way to truly understand and help them. I don't believe that that's necessarily so. Nonetheless, I do have the training, and I thank God for that. It was a very valuable experience. It taught me a lot.
But they didn't teach you how to deal with unjust laws and mercenary
bureaucrats. We did have some bureaucracy courses. Actually, I learned how to deal with a lot of pig-headed bureaucrats while running the first long-distance telephone company, which used strict prepaid cards. It's called Phone Club USA, and I worked with a gentleman that was a worldwide marketeer, and I was able to learn how to effectively communicate with people and recruit people, get things going.
So you were then suddenly at Broadway and Ocean in September, after you'd gotten your vehicles back, paid what, $2,400?
No. We'd paid several hundred dollars for the first three vehicles. And at this point, I didn't have the $2,400. You know, one of the things about when you end up out on the streets, it seems to, the problem seems to escalate for the worse. You know, one thing goes wrong, and then another thing goes wrong. You know, if all you have is your vehicle, and the vehicle breaks down, then you can't get to work. You can't do work. You can't make money And it just gets worse and worse and worse. It seems that the car part that is hardest to get and most expensive is the one that goes out. And you know, you can talk to countless people and they'll tell you the same story. Generally, what will happen, the city of Santa Cruz they won't even allow you to work on your vehicle. They want you to get the vehicle off the road, but you can't work on it. You know, there's a dichotomy going on here because they do strange things like that. For instance, you know that you can't walk. You know, the Monterey Bay is a sanctuary for the ocean and whatnot. So we don't want chemicals spilling out there. It's technically illegal to wash your car in your driveway.
Except for Saul's Tannery, of course, another protected individual.
Exactly. You know, people could get busted for doing things. You know, if in fact you bought some chemicals to clean your motor with, you would get busted. But the funny thing is, they allow those chemicals to be sold. What's up with that, you know?
Let me continue with the history of this.
Right.
Of your own situation. You lost a vehicle in September, and you were determined not to be kind of dragged into this homeless activist stuff that I, who am not homeless, do have the time to.
That I didn't want to do it, it's just that I knew that once I got involved, my heart would become part of it, and I would have to really put myself into it. And another reason was because I could see a lot of improper management of the problems. Even though people have the desire, they don't know how to go about doing things.
You're criticizing me, sir.
No. And I'm not speaking about you at all. But I'm speaking about the people that are in the situation, don't necessarily have all the skills. And that's fine, you know. And sometimes they need someone to help them along with these things. And you know, that's why people like you are so important, because you are doing a lot of the legwork. You know, I recently had an opportunity to take a look at a book, I guess council petitions and a history of all the different things that have been going on in your fight towards helping the homeless since. You've been doing this, which is what, since 89?
88,
right. And, you know, funny enough, that's what, you know, we both started doing it at the same time. You just continued doing it, and I went off to live my life. But here I am, back again. Here I am, back again. And the reason I'm doing this now is because they have taken everything.
So give us the blow-by-blow. After they took your vehicle in September, then what did you do? You went out to Harvey West and you were.
We went out to Harvey
brother.
West and we were trying to get our act together to get out of there. My brother ended up over there as well.
You were parked on the Harvey West industrial area.
That's right. And you know, we were moving our vehicles along, and you know, again, one vehicle's out. You know, there's a registration problem with another that we were buying. To make a long story short, this last week, they came and took away the one vehicle where all of my tools were. Even though I'd been moving them, they knew that I was on my way out. They came Wednesday, I guess after this last...
October 24th?
Yes, after the meeting at Emily Riley's place.
After Emily Riley's resolution to enforce along the riverbank, yeah.
And Tuesday, coincidentally, they took away Kathy's vehicle, who was one of the people that prompted me to start this organization.
This is Kathy Massey.
That's right.
And she would be here today, but she's not feeling well. She's
and she also has no vehicle with which to get here.
Right. I actually dropped her daughter and her granddaughter off at her vehicle, and they were concerned about her because she'd been ill, and she's out there in a vehicle at the Harvey West. And hi, Kathy, if you can, give a call. And by the way, the lines are open in case you want to talk to Ed Meneses, who's head of HOW, Homeless on Wheels, certainly one of the prime movers here. The phone number to the studio is 427-3772, 427-3772. And Ed, if you see this blinking, let me know. I may not notice it. That means there's an incoming call coming into the studio. Ed, while we're here, you also have a voicemail you can be reached at. I believe it's 457-9754. Extension 1913, and I'm going to try to. You were talking about having an office open soon in the Veterans Building. How's that coming along?
Dave Alvin has gotten that secured. So we do have an office there. I'll be checking that out tomorrow. We'll have an office. We did have a computer, but that was taken along with my trailer this week.
We can thank the Santa Cruz Police Department and perhaps Emily Riley for that. Yeah.
Yeah, again, you know, what's about to happen now is I have no choice but to continue full... I'm just going to go for it. They've taken everything I have. I'm going to fight back. You know, the way I feel about this situation here is I am a native. I am born and raised here. I've lived here my entire life in the city of Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz County, and they are trying to push us out. Now, whether we have money at one point or don't, because those things come and go, as I've just really learned, and, you know, a lot of other people should realize that lesson, because there was a great industry around here in the Silicon Valley. There's people making tons and tons and tons of money, and now there are 50,000 people getting laid off at a shot, 50, 60,000 people from different companies. These people are losing their jobs, they're losing their income, they're losing that thing that they thought was so valuable, and consequently, they're losing money. Yet that influx, the Silicon Valley, escalated the prices around here in Santa Cruz to a point that they're just ridiculous. $650 to rent a room, $650 to share a room in a house, to rent a room. That's ridiculous. A studio apartment costs $11, $12, $1,400. It costs three times that to get in. You know, I recently met a girl that works at the Homeless Garden Project who is young, married, working, doing all the right things, paying her, saved her money, got a place in Watsonville. But after several months, they just offered $1,200 a month. They can't afford it with their new baby. They're ending up out on the street. Now, what will happen if, in fact, the city comes along and takes away their vehicle? Are they supposed to go live on the river?
No, that will be illegal.
That would be illegal.
It's illegal to live anywhere inside or outside. As I said, tonight and the next few nights, I suspect Camp Paradise, which is home only to about 30 or 40 people now, well, because some people have been scared away.
You know,
but it's going to be driven away, too, unless people unite. Homes on Wheels, Camp Paradise, all the other campers who are in this situation, unless the community and community feels that these civil rights violations are just egregious, like I do. I will say there's one small bright spot. I was at the Green Party meeting yesterday, the Green Assembly meeting, I think it's called the Green Assembly, I want to make sure, of Santa Cruz County, and they voted to support Camp Paradise and send a letter to the City Council, which is fine, because the City Council will ignore it. They did not vote to hold Mayor Fitzmaurice accountable, which they were supposed to do, what, 9 or 10 months ago. There was a concern brought forward by Green Party member Becky Johnson about the mayor. They are not holding Ed Porter accountable or responsible for his, he was endorsed by the Green Party on a specific promise to overturn the sleeping ban. And Emily Riley said, according to activist David Silva, that she would overturn the sleeping ban by St. Valentine's Day at the latest. Of course, she took no action whatsoever, and now it's made it worse, because not only out in Harvey West are you faced with sleeping ban tickets if you sleep in your vehicle, but there are signs posted on a number of streets, thank you to Emily Riley, that stay between 5 a.m. and 7 a.m. If your vehicle is there, it can be towed. And indeed, I understand, more important, there's a new green light signal to the police department to go after people in the Poganip, people in vehicles, and I'm thinking very soon Camp Paradise. And you've said that this has resulted in how many vehicles would you estimate that you know about that have been towed in the last, since
I know four
October
this
23rd.
Week. Four this week.
Now we're talking about vehicles.
Two being mine.
Now, were your vehicles improperly
They tried to take my brother's.
Were your vehicles improperly registered? Were they properly registered?
One of them was not. They said that what my brother's was not, but then they couldn't make up their mind. They were going to. He refused to come out of his trailer because he had been advised not to, and they said, "If you don't come in, if you don't come out, we'll break the doors and come in and get you." And he said to them, "Well, you might as well, and take him to jail, obviously." And he said, "You might as well take me to jail because at least I'll have a place to sleep."
And what did the police do?
I spoke with them and told them that we would be leaving the next day. We got my brother's vehicle out of there that day. The person...
Harvey West.
Out of Harvey West.
Industrial Park.
Out of the area altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the city of Santa Cruz, because, you know, we understand, and, you know, we had been working with the program. We just couldn't do it before, you know. Finally, we had everything set up. We got my brother's vehicle out. The person, my good friend Dana Burt, who helped him move out, was later on in an accident. His vehicle overturned. He was badly hurt. He's at home in bed, seriously hurt, because he doesn't have the money for the hospitalization. Bad back injuries. I haven't even seen him yet. I've talked to him a little bit. And God bless you, Dana. Hopefully you'll feel much better soon.
What happened to your brother's vehicle, though? Is it okay?
It's fine.
Okay.
We couldn't move mine too far out of the area. The reason was we got it out of there because we knew they'd come and get it, mm-hmm. right? They knew I hadn't been staying there. I only stayed there one night in order to not, because I figured they'd be back after they got my truck. Mm-hmm. They'd be back for one of the trailers. And I was only there to make sure that didn't happen. Of course, I prevented that. That was Thursday night. Friday, we moved the vehicles. We moved my trailer several blocks away from there. We spoke to all the people in the vicinity to let them know we'd be back in the morning for the vehicle. We went back, and of course, the trailer was gone. We couldn't get it out of there because we didn't want to tow it illegally. My friend who wrecked was going to help us move. You know, see how things
mm-hmm, yeah.
work out?
One domino falls and they all
now,
go, you know?
I don't have any clothes. My computer's gone. All my business contacts were in there. I can't contact anyone. I'm just basically screwed. So, since I don't have any time, anything left to do, I might as well fight these people. And you know what? I'm going to. I was very angry yesterday after this happened. I left, and we just happened to be driving on Mission Street, where Emily Riley owns her bakery, where there was a protest earlier this week, which I did not attend, by the way, because I was off working.
Doing auto detailing?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We because we are sincerely trying to make an effort to get ourselves out of this. But the city does really, you know, they tell us they want us out, but then they take away all the resources that we have in order for us to get out.
Indeed, what they do with homeless people is say, you can't sleep here, you know, we want you to leave town, but then they give them tickets, so they have to come back to court.
That's right.
To town.
Yeah.
Or they get, you know, deported back to town, you know, extradited on warrants.
So, I left her a note. I stopped by Emily's and left her a note basically stating that I was angry and that whatever they had hoped to accomplish is backfiring on them, because now I am definitely on this. And I also let her know that we're going to hold demonstrations, peaceful, nonviolent demonstrations, that I hope to make her infamous. And basically, I was going to make an all-out assault media war on them, and I'm going to start doing that. This is the first of those.
You're talking about Emily Riley, the councilwoman who has so far not only kept the sleeping ban in place, and not only has criminalized parking from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. at Harvey West, but has also given the green light to the police through her enforcement resolution of October 23rd to go after people like yourself. Now, I asked Emily Riley, she was sent an email before this show began, informing her that there were matters of some import to her that she could listen into. I don't know whether she's listening, but Emily, you're welcome to call in and express your perspective. If you have a different point of view on this, please let's hear it, because I know you've been unwilling to talk with homeless activists directly. I understand you finally sent, I don't know, a four-line message to Becky Johnson, one of the protesters at Emily's bakery, saying that you've been talking to other homeless people, whoever they were. I know you talked to one student named Nathan who said that you ducked issues right and left. When you talked to me afterward about what happened. But you aren't talking to people who you previously talked to with no problem, when you said you were against the sleeping ban, when you ran on a platform of compassion, when you made comments about being willing to end the sleeping ban by Valentine's Day. Now suddenly all that is gone, and you're part of the machine that criminalizes poor people and criminalizes people who are working people, like Ed here. We're talking with Ed Meneses of Homes on Wheels.
Now
we have an incoming call.
Great.
Maybe Emily is calling in.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi there. This talk about Emily Riley is interesting.
You don't sound like Emily Riley.
No, I'm not.
Oh, go ahead.
I've been in her store, and I just heard you mention her platform was supposedly a compassionate platform, And there's a picture in her store there with this fellow. I forgot his name. It's, you know, on the left as you're going to get your coffee.
This is Emily's Bakery at Mission and Laurel. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And
this is not a plug for that, by the way.
It says, you know, I learned from this fellow, and it has two pictures of him up there about compassion and about truly love is all you need. And one day he saw zebras dancing above my bakery, so I put all the zebra motif everywhere. And you know, it just really leads you to believe that she is a really compassionate and, you know, it says right there, love is all you need.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be interesting.
What is this caller's name?
What's your name, caller? Or are you going to be anonymous?
I'm going to be anonymous.
Okay, that's fine. Can I say something?
I wish I could hear.
Oh,
her.
Here, hang on.
May I say something about the compassion?
Can you hear Ed, by the way, speaking?
Issue here.
Yeah, I can hear.
Let me demonstrate how the city council gives their compassion. After they take away your vehicles, it costs you $85 just to talk to them about getting it out. Okay, $85. So if you don't have that money, then what happens? You're screwed, right? Now, if you don't have everything just so, all of your possessions are lost. Anything that you had inside of those vehicles is gone. They have taken my tools, all of my clothes, all of my business records. Now, if I don't have, which I don't at this moment, have $85, especially $170, whatever, the $170 for both vehicles to give, what is going to happen to my stuff? They say that they'll take it to the dump. But you know what? I wonder when the tow yards actually get rid of all people's belongings. Does it go to the dump? Do they just dump it? Or don't, in fact, those tow yard employees get to keep the property of other people? So, in effect, the city council is letting these other people who they're in business with, collision with, keep the property of the homeless.
Any thoughts on that, caller? Hello? Hello?
Lost him.
Lines are open here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. Sorry about that, caller. You feel free to call back if you have something you wanted to add to what you were saying, and what Ed had to say I think was important as well. Phone line here is 427-3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. How are you doing?
Hey, I think I recognize this voice, but you're not Emily Riley either.
No, but they do. They do allow their employees get quiet. They get to take the cars, sell them, you know, fix them up if they can, and they sell them. I know 100% they do it. The family member that we're having problems with used to do it, does it still, as far as I know. You know, he fixes up cars that they tow in, and
we're talking
he gets them pretty much free of charge.
North County tow, we're talking?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ones that they don't think, you know, they're going to get any money off it at their auction about. But, yeah, it's a big business for the employees and friends of the owners and stuff like that. Yeah.
Wow,
100% sure.
Well, thank
you. In
fact,
I'm driving one right now.
Maybe you can get Ed's.
I'm not giving
out.
It back.
I see. Well,
not one of his cars. But they're also, I can tell you that the city that we were spoken to by a lady, Lynn, I forgot her last name, but anyway, she counsels people that are about to be homeless, and maybe there's a way to stop it or you know, whatever, you know, give you a little help. And her suggestion after, you know, we came to it is that we go ahead and move into, because we're losing our housing, to move into just Friday, she counseled us to move into, or Thursday, into Paradise Village, so...
Oh, well...
She doesn't really think they're going to be shutting them down either.
Now, who advised you of this?
It's Lynn. She works... I got her card. She works for the HPHP.
I got to tell you that Officer Seely, who has been, of course, he's not always the best source, as you know, but, and I will be playing an interview shortly in which the testimony is that he's been telling at least people at Camp Freedom, which is a camp that was in the Pogonip, that they can't go to Paradise Village because Paradise Village is going to be swept away soon.
Swept away is what he's saying.
I don't have his exact words. I wasn't there, but you'll be playing that interview.
Yeah, it
again.
Sounds like he's still saying about the rain, but everyone else that's been, you know, we've been camping around that river for 7 years. We know a lot more what it does than what the people are just trying to scare up the population of that don't know, and the people that are, you know, living around.
Well,
they're seeing a bunch of homeless people in beds and tents. coming out the mouth of the San Lorenzo.
Well, definitely give it a try. To go down to Camp Paradise, for those who are listening, it's easy to find. You go to Denny's on Ocean. You go down Felker Street to the right of Denny's till you reach the San Lorenzo River, and off to the right is a dirt path. You go down under the bridge, and it's about 300 or 400 yards up the river. And there are empty tents up there now. And, you know, if you're drug, you don't have to be drug-free in the sense of, you know, clean and sober all the lifelong day, but you can't use drugs and alcohol in camp, as I understand it. And there's also, you have to be, you know, willing to abide by the rules of the camp. It's open, but, and I think they want to have as many people there as they can to, you know, establish the community support for that group. I'm just concerned about the camp being swept away, because I think when the armory opens, that's exactly what they're going to do. Because they haven't got, you know, they have all this pressure on them from the environmentalists, and they have pressure on them. The police department has been making massive sweeps elsewhere. But indeed, I don't necessarily say Officer Seeley is always either 100% accurate or even 100% honest.
No. Well, he's a 100% liar.
Uh-huh.
I do know that for a fact.
Now, why do you call Officer Seeley a man of untruth? Can you give us some
specifics?
I've
got facts. You know, I still have it on paper where he's lied to me and lied to his sergeant and everything. You know, from other cases, when they tried to evict us, you know, when Karen Gillette tried to get us evicted from
1998, 97,
right, the Homeless Community Resource Center, and then she found out that she wasn't doing right. But, yeah, he lied, said he didn't even come by and talk to us about it. He knocked it. He wouldn't even let me out of my apartment.
Well, I know that he made some threats about Camp Paradise in July that were not accurate, or in June and July, but, you know, it's always possible he was given bad information or whatever.
They treat their, even the officers are treated like mushrooms, you know.
Right.
From the
feed them
the
shit
top.
And keep them
no
in the dark, yeah.
No one knows
until
they say what to do. But, yeah, I was very afraid of it, even just from listening to your show, so maybe put a positive deal into it, because I'm going to live there now.
Oh, great.
But anyway, they seem to be pretty positive, and Larry doesn't seem to be too worried about it.
There, right?
He's not going.
There are no remaining vehicles.
Oh, Ed has no remaining. Well, Ed, time to park your carcass maybe at Camp Paradise. Who knows? There's a tent down there anyway. I think you have to, of course, check this out with the camp authorities. You know, what about the folks who aren't at Camp Paradise? What about the 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people, the hundreds of people who have, several hundred people who have vehicles, who are...
I'll tell you who's not getting tickets is people that come to Santa Cruz with $200,000 motorhomes who
right.
can park along West Cliff Drive.
Oh, yeah, they drive
blocking
right past.
Blocking three or five vehicle spots. They can come and go and take whatever they want. But if we do that, we get ticketed. By the way, that's another complaint we have against the city, is that they are ticketing, they are specifically targeting the homeless. They're specifically targeting us people out there, because North County gets to park their vehicles out on that same street and not get any tickets.
North County,
everyone
too.
Else. Truckers from out of town get to do it, and they don't get ticketed, only the homeless. Is that legal? I'll be finding out and letting you know.
Yeah.
It's not justice, but, you know,
it's
back
them.
To the gold standard on justice.
Well, you know, it's the same thing as what they did centuries ago in this country. You know, they decided that they wanted Indians out of a certain spot, and they kicked them out. Okay? That's what they're doing to us. There's no difference. They are kicking us people out of our homes and the land in which we were raised.
Oh, sure, and they'd let us go live in the desert if we wanted to.
In fact, Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice said to Kathy Macy when she went to go complain to him, well, if you can't afford to live here, then maybe you should move.
Yeah,
well, you know what I say to him? You should move. You leave. I think that there's a whole lot of people that would appreciate having Kathy Massey around here more than him.
I would. That's for damn sure. In fact, the less I see of Tim Fitzmaurice, the happier I am. And that's not a matter of a personal thing. It's a matter of his positions on issues and his way of handling meetings and so forth. But, Doug, is there anything more you want to say, or shall
sure,
we...
Sure. I think we ought to just keep filling up Camp Paradise.
Well,
I think so, too.
Sounds good. Maybe that's the answer. Certainly, I think it's a good point of defense to begin, and hopefully we'll get a call from Camp Paradise, although, as I said, I think their cellular is gone, so maybe, Ed, it's time for you to move in with your cellular phone. Who knows? Thanks for calling in, Doug.
Okay, Rob.
By the way, people can contact me and Homeless on Wheels. On my cellular phone number is 247-7223. Otherwise, they can leave a voice message at 457-9754, extension 1913. We are going to be resuming regular meetings. I've gotten a lot of calls and a lot of support from the community. We've only just begun this. We've had computers donated. Of course, those are in the trailer, so we can't get them and make those available to the people. looks like we're getting a call now on our line. We are now asking the community to support us, and we're going to be doing this in a big way. Number one, there are a lot of people out there who don't have vehicles and could get into them. If you have a vehicle to donate to the homeless, be it a trailer, a truck, a motorhome, give us a call. We'll make sure somebody gets it. You know, we're trying to help get the people off the street. You know, it's not our goal to keep people living in these situations. It is our hope and goal to escalate people, help get them off of the streets, make them totally self-reliant. If in fact somebody can donate either computers or vehicles, please give us a call and we'll help some people out.
Give those numbers again, Ed.
Our voicemail number is 457-9754, extension 1913, and my cell number is 247-7223.
And if you forget those numbers, just call 423-HUFF, 423-4833, which is a 24-hour message phone for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and I'll pass those numbers on to you. In fact, they'll probably be on the voicemail message soon. So, Ed, you're kind of working on getting a meeting time together. Right now there's no specific time planned, or?
Well, we didn't have a place to do the meetings after, you know, once the weather started getting foul. I was concerned about people getting sick. You know, some of the homeless aren't in fact in great shape.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather take a little more time and do things properly, mm-hmm, than rush to them and get them done poorly.
Well, folks want to get together.
We will be meeting this week, though. We'll
probably be at the city council meeting at 6:30 on Tuesday evening, right?
That's a good thing to do. We'll have some flyers available with a new meeting time. We have gotten to use an office in the vets building. One of our people has secured an office there. We're working with the homeless vets because we want to help those also. And, you know, another issue to talk about here is the fact that, you know, the city council wants to take away the veterans building from the vets. What's up with that? As these people are out there fighting for us now, today, when they come back, they will possibly not have a building to take care of their needs later on.
Well, maybe they just, as Mayor Fitzmaurice, should move to someplace they can afford.
Right.
Thank you, Tim.
Maybe to Afghanistan, right?
Well, I think we could drop the... I've always suggested the solution here is to drop the Santa Cruz homeless on Afghanistan. You see, that would be one way of, you know, dealing with... Actually, I think we should drop the city council in Afghanistan, but that sounds like a terrorist solution. I'm probably going to be arrested, so hopefully somebody else will take over the show.
By the way, I'd like to mention, speaking of terrorists, I did leave a nasty letter yesterday at Emily Riley's bakery, and I'm sure she'll get it. You know, I don't want her to think that I was trying to suggest any kind of terrorist threat or activity. I was very angry. I want to apologize if she thinks that I was leaving a negative message. In fact, my message was positive for the homeless people. I will be leading an assault on the city council. I'm going to contact a lot of
peaceful
radio contacts that I have. I expect to be on television more. I am a Spanish-speaking citizen who used to have a radio show in Spanish. I will be doing that to our Spanish brothers and sisters, because there's a lot of people here that don't speak English that are homeless. Regardless of where you're from, if in fact you are here in Santa Cruz and you are in a vehicle, we welcome you to contact us and to be a part of what we're about to do. We will be having some kind of demonstrations against the city council. We will be contacting business leaders. We will get the support of all the local parties, because I'm going to tell you one thing that's very important for people to realize. All of you out there support our cause. There's 99% of the people listening or here in town actually have a heart and understand the fact that one of their family members or friends or someone they know is about to lose their home and possibly become homeless. So these are good people. That doesn't mean that they, just because they've lost this, they're lower or worse than the rest of the Santa Cruz society. It's a temporary situation. We have to educate people about that and help these people get back on their feet, rather than take their vehicles away from them and screw them.
Perhaps you can advise Ed Porter, that who talked about an infestation down at Camp Paradise or near Camp Paradise. An interesting way to describe. He's talking about graffiti, and he was concerned about trash near Camp Paradise. Of course, Camp Paradise has recently done two huge trash cleanups, one with the city and one independently. And of course, the city has refused to help get rid of the garbage bags at Camp Paradise. It was able to, you know, put all the trash into. Again, I want to remind people that tomorrow, that's Monday, at six to seven, there'll be a Happy John Dine memorial. Happy John Dine was the man shot dead by Santa Cruz police in what many believe was a murder and not simply an accidental shooting. The officer who pulled the trigger was Officer Connor Carey. His partner was Martin Over. It happened in 1997. Dine was a homeless activist who was concerned about civil rights for poor people and police brutality. He was a sort of a hippie-like fellow, a little bit learning disabled, a little bit kind of out there himself, but he was shot dead at a bus stop at Front and Water Streets. Did I have that right? No, Front and Soquel Streets. Sorry about that. And he, the police fabricated a story very quickly, or came out with a story that he had had a toy gun in his hand, pointed at the police, took a combat stance. In fact, 10 witnesses agreed he had nothing in his hand. There was no combat stance, and the Citizens Police Review Board, or Police Rubber Stamping Board, as I call it, later came in with another story that he was reaching for a toy gun. 4 witnesses who were interviewed, according to activist Becky Johnson, who did the interviews, claimed that after this was all over, a Officer Over walked over, pulled a toy gun from the fanny pack of John Dine, and threw it down. Which would, of course, is sort of equivalent to what some police in L.A. are reported to do in terms of planting weapons. So, Officer Over, if you wish to challenge this, the courts are available. I don't say that it is necessarily I don't have ironclad evidence of that. I'm saying, though, that 4 witnesses are testifying that you did this. And, of course, there's never been an independent investigation of it. Anyway, there's a protest tomorrow, a memorial. Bring candles, bring flowers. It's going to happen between 6 and 7. And bring sidewalk chalk, because what we do is we chalk on the sidewalk a memorial to John Dine and to other victims of police abuse. For instance, Raymond Quinton, who was killed by police this year. We have an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
It's not a protest. It's just a memorial.
Oh, is this the woman who is going to be leading this so-called memorial?
I am indeed.
I see. Well, why don't you tell us a little more about it, unless you've heard enough already?
Well, it's just a nice, tasteful, downtown-style memorial for Happy John Dine from 6 to 7 p.m.
Well, will chocolate croissant be available, as they were at the Marty Wormhout gathering at the community police station last night?
And get your coffee lattes at Emily's Bakery.
Oh, yes, coffee lattes.
Bring it down, because
mm-hmm.
we know that Emily Riley is just rushing to put some reinvestigation of the shooting of Happy John Dine on the city council agenda.
Well, you yourself have been doing a lot of writing about Emily Riley. We do have, this is activist Becky Johnson on the line, it sounds like.
Yes, it is.
Or one of her, maybe it's her daughter imitating her, you never can tell. You actually have gone through the archives and come up with a statement by Emily Riley from several years ago where she was talking about the importance, the obscenity, or the how
she called it appalling and an embarrassment to our community
to have a sleeping ban in place for homeless people. Yeah, and that would be, of course, what Ed and other people in their vehicles are being targeted under is the sleeping ban. And once she was in office, or actually soon after she began to run for office, she dropped all this. Perhaps she got large contributions from. Who did she get contributions from? Do you know about her campaign funding situation?
Oh, well, there was some records of that. The Seaside Company was one of her funders. So was SEIU was a funder. I don't think that there's any really big smoking guns regarding her campaign funding. But what I'm more concerned about is the type of person that she represented herself to being to the voters before she ran for office and while she was running for office, what she said at the forums, what she put on her campaign literature. People really thought that they were electing someone who would be compassionate to homeless people and raise those issues that affect the lives and the quality of life of homeless people in our city.
She didn't want to raise
and
their false hopes.
Say that again.
Raising their false hopes. That's what she said at the last city council meeting that I attended. We can no longer raise these false hopes of the homeless out there.
Uh-huh. False hopes, Riley, huh? Yeah, well, I think that's very appropriate. She raised a lot of false hopes, so in the 2 years she was kind of doing her little stint campaigning for city council by showing up at all these meetings. Anything you want to add, Becky, about this Happy John Dine protest, I should say memorial, tomorrow?
It's a memorial. I mean, why would we protest the fact that he was shot to death on a sidewalk 5 seconds after the police car pulled in front of the bus stop where Happy John Dine, according to witness Alani Balloager, who was on the roof of New Leaf Market taking a break from work, and she said he'd just been standing there waiting at the bus stop for the 10 minutes prior to his shooting death.
Well, of course, the claim of the officers was that they'd received a report from the Catalyst bouncer, Ben Newman,
mm-hmm.
that he had a weapon, and the police were sort of super hyped up and afraid that he was, you know...
You know, I really do think that there's something to it. I do think he did have a toy gun on his person, and it may even have been this very realistic-looking black handgun. But he wasn't pointing it at anybody. He didn't have it in his hands. He wasn't presenting any threat to the skateboard that
was coming by. Well, I understand he was disrespectful and said, fuck off.
To the officer. Well, the officers pulled up in front, and the officer said something to John Dine. Something like, get down off the wall, or some sort of rude comment. And to which John Dine replied, fuck off. And those were his last words. Kerry shot him to death with two bullets to the abdomen, although all the witnesses thought he was dead on the spot. Then Martin Over went over.
That's the officer Over.
His officer Over, his Connor Kerry's partner, went over and immediately started rolling John Dine's body around looking for something and handling his body in a way that was not how you handle someone who has just been...
critically wounded.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so certainly not a medically certified manner. He removed something from the waist area, most likely John Dine's fanny pack, and threw it on the sidewalk. There were just plenty of witnesses that saw or heard that. He didn't. But then Police Chief Belcher put out the notice to the press that when Connor Kerry had pulled up the car in front of the bus stop, that he had ordered John Dine to show his hands or to do something, and John Dine had not complied, that he had instead reached into his waist area, pulled out a very realistic toy gun, went into a combat stance and pointed it at the officers, forcing Connor Kerry to fire him. That was the official police view. It wasn't even held up by Connor Kerry's own statements to the district attorney's office investigators the night of the shooting. The only person who said anything remotely like that was Officer Martin Over and Ben Newman, who was riding along in the back seat of the car, and who, by the way, was Connor Kerry's best friend from junior high school on. Ben Newman's story is just all over the map. Just nothing is substantiated about it. And that has been the official police version, the Ben Newman version of events. The Citizens Police Review Board came up with a different conclusion because they couldn't overcome 10 eyewitnesses who said John Dine had nothing in his hands, including Connor Kerry's statement. Connor Kerry said that he shot John Dine when he was in the process of pulling a toy gun out of his, he doesn't really say from where. So there you have it. You have the complicity of not only the Santa Cruz Police Department, the District Attorney's Office under then District Attorney Art Danner.
Now Judge Art Danner.
The Santa Cruz Sentinel, incredible. incredibly poor and one sloppy, one-sided police-supporting reporting. The city council doing virtually nothing. I think Scott Kennedy was the only person who publicly stated that if the Citizens Police Review Board wanted to do an independent investigation, he would vote for the funding for it, which is sort of a hint what he thought they should do or would be required to do. But no, the Citizens Police Review Board did no independent investigation.
One of the few bright moments of Scott Kennedy.
And they ended up exonerating Connor Carey, and then, but never really quite explaining why they didn't say anything about Chief Belcher, who was putting out a completely different version of events.
Well, Chief is a very creative guy. He has a literary bent. We also should give some credit to Celia Scott, who was mayor at the time, who ordered the district attorney's report released to the public. And we've never actually seen the district attorney's report for these other shootings. For example, the I don't know if we ever got the report on Raymond Quinton, the man who was shot dead on June 29th of
mm-hmm.
this year by the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Nor has any news been released about the... there had been a string of bank robberies that had occurred in Santa Cruz just very shortly previous to the shooting death of Raymond Quinton. And yet we've never heard anything saying that he was at all connected or that they had found any evidence that he had been connected with these bank robberies.
And the only information I have is that he was a federal parole violator, but it isn't clear for what.
He had been released. He had been arrested and convicted of bank robbery and
mm-hmm.
was out on parole
mm-hmm.
at the time. So that appears to be the reason why he was shot to death.
Well, he had a weapon. Didn't they claim he had a weapon, and that was again the...
Well, yeah. They did find a gun in the back seat of the car. I think there was no evidence that it had been shot.
Well, perhaps he was in a combat stance. Or was he pulling it from his fanny pack? Or I'm not sure. One of the two, maybe. Maybe both. Anyway, tomorrow between 6 and 7 at Front and Soquel,
yes.
there will be a memorial.
I think it's called the Washington Mutual Bank. In there, of course.
Yeah. Bring your rain gear, a warm coat, maybe a sign or two for remembering Happy John, some flowers, some candles. And some sidewalk chalk.
Yeah, but it's not a protest, because, you know, should we protest the
not
police
a protest.
Murder of a homeless person, you know?
Certainly not. I think that's business as usual, at least,
yeah.
But usually in larger towns. I got to say that I guess we don't know that Raymond Quinton was homeless, so maybe he wasn't the latest victim of the Santa Cruz Police Department there.
I don't think they really had a current address on him.
And I'm not saying, I know nothing about Quinton, you know, who knows? It may have been a justified shooting, but we're never going to know because we don't have any independent investigation process, and the Citizens Police Rubber Stamping Board, as I like to call them, didn't call for it under Chair Arnie Leff, a Green Party member, I might add. Anyway.
I gotta love those Greens.
You gotta love them Greens. So listen, thank you for the update, and anything else you want to add?
Just show up at City Council also at 6:30.
The day after, on Tuesday.
Right, on Tuesday.
November
13th.
Yeah, there'll be some hot soup from Joe Schultz.
And there's really nothing on the agenda. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's the demolition of the Dolphin Lee.
We're going to talk about that
property.
A little bit, too. Maybe maybe you can call back on that one.
Perhaps I will, especially if you start going too far off the record.
Okie doke.
All right.
Well, thank you.